Welcome to the Wackle Gather podcast. My name is Judy Mitchum. Wackle is an organization for top female leaders in marketing, media, and communications. In this podcast series, I will be talking to some top female leaders, women who are also known to be change makers. This podcast is being released in advance of the Wackle Gather event on the 23rd of May. It is sponsored by Whaler, the most creative influencer marketing company. Today, I'm with Lisa Thomas, Chief Brand Officer of Virgin. A Cambridge graduate, Lisa started in direct marketing at the agency Wunderman, then moved to the hot shop Craig Jones. Whilst at Craig Jones, Lisa was approached by M&C Saatchi and given the challenge of starting a direct and digital agency from scratch. She seized the challenge and her agency, named Leader, was incredibly successful. And I know that because I worked with Lisa at the time at M&C Saatchi. It wasn't long before Lisa was promoted to the top job of CEO of the whole M&C Saatchi group. In 2016, she moved client-side to Virgin and is now responsible for overseeing more than 60 businesses in 35 countries. Lisa is a true trailblazer, but I can also share that she is a lovely person, very supportive of other women, and incredibly genuine. Hello to Lisa.
Hello, Judy.
And Lisa, you have just suffered every woman's nightmare coming here today. In fact, we've been at a lunch together, an industry lunch, and do you want to just share with us what has happened to you?
It was catastrophic, really.
Yes.
I was leaving my office, which is in Paddington, walking down the canal, and my heel snapped in half. So I soldiered on, walked all the way to the tube, got on the tube at Warwick Avenue, off at Piccadilly Circus, quite a few people noticing I was hobbling on one shoe, and then went to the lunch, and Judy, on Judy's advice, found myself in Rosslyn Bromley on my way here to record this. So I now have a new pair of shoes, which is always... brings a bit of joy on a Monday afternoon.
I'm glad to say that I was responsible for the new shoes that you're wearing, and very nice they are too. So that has punctured the perception of every woman being an invincible superwoman where nothing bad ever happens, and what a catastrophic start to the day. Lisa, you grew up in the lovely, idyllic woodland of Wales. Tell us about that.
Actually, I grew up on the Wirral.
Okay.
Which is not very far from Wales. And I'm not sure it was idyllic. It was okay. Definitely countryside, yeah, in comparison to living in London. But I did have a very lovely childhood, brought up in a very brother and sister, mum and dad, very well looked after until they sent me off to boarding school in North Wales.
And was that a terrible prospect?
It was... in hindsight, it was a strange thing to do, to pack your daughter off to an all-girls school in North Wales, thinking you were going to give them the best education you could. Although hard to understand why any teacher would go and teach at an all-girls school in North Wales. But, you know, we'll leave that over there. It was good. I made some great, great friends with whom I am very close still today.
Yes.
But it got challenging, sort of. Hard to follow all the rules quite, yes, for 7 years was quite hard.
So what were you like as a girl? Were you as trailblazing and feisty as you are now?
Interestingly, I always felt that I was quite lacking in confidence, yeah, and not particularly trailblazing. But I think I was probably one of the difficult ones. Having listened to someone talking just a few hours ago who talked about difficult women, probably was and always have been quite a difficult woman.
Well, I have to ask you, because I work for a group of all-girls schools, that did being in a girls-only environment help you or hinder you in your confidence?
Oh, definitely helped. I think... much as I look back now and wish that I'd probably had a bit more of a balanced environment to grow up in, and have both my boys are at mixed schools, I do feel like I grew up in an environment where I completely believed that as a woman I could do anything a man could, other than possibly play rugby or, you know, take them on in a physical challenge. It didn't really even occur to me that there was an expectation outside of school, and as I went into the workplace or to university, that there was a sort of general assumption that boys were better than girls.
Yeah.
At sort of almost everything, as I've subsequently discovered. But I didn't really encounter sexism, and I think that made me believe that I could do not anything, but what I chose to do, I would be able to do.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. And you mentioned university, of course, and you went to Cambridge, which was quite an achievement. But your first job was not what one would expect of the trailblazing female that you now are. What was that?
Oh, so my very first job was working at Thomas de la Rue as a graduate trainee.
Yes.
Printing banknotes and checkbooks. Obviously, I didn't actually print them, but I did go to the factory and work on that trainee program. Slightly disappointing, though. It was a great job. I loved it. But slightly disappointingly, it was in Basingstoke.
Right.
Which, having moved from the Wirral and desperately wanting to live in London, was quite disappointing. And secondly, they told me at 22 that I probably couldn't do the job I wanted to do, which was to go and live in South America until I was at least 30, which felt like the most horrifically long time. So I moved to working in agencies in London.
So from the glamour of printing banknotes in Basingstoke, you hit London with a vengeance. And of course, you and I, we were reunited in Embassy Saatchi, which was quite an amazing agency. I have very fond memories of that. What do you feel, what do you remember about Embassy Saatchi and those days when you were setting up your own agency?
So I think I'd be doing a disservice if I didn't say they were probably the best years of my career. I doubt I'll ever get to start or even choose to start a business again. It was fantastic to be able to do it with the support of the team at M&C Saatchi, although daunting on day one, literally being the only person working for the company. But very exciting. We grew very quickly. I managed to encourage some incredible people to come and work with me, and we built a very successful business, which is still going today. And so it was great, a great time. And I also loved my job as the group CEO here in the UK. I really enjoyed that. It was a really fun, good place to be.
Well, I must admit, I absolutely loved it there, and it was a great agency, so I agree with you on that. But it must have been very daunting with all those legends of the ad industry giving you the challenge of setting up an agency from scratch. Did you feel terror at that prospect, or how did you manage to overcome the huge challenge?
I think I was very pragmatic about it. Mm. I chose to leave what was a great job, which I loved at Crate Jones, partly because I felt I needed the challenge. And I was young enough to think, if it all goes wrong, I can find another job. It might not be as great as the one I left, but I'll find another job. And at the time when you don't have anything, you know, you don't have any revenue, you have a very limited amount of cost, the risk isn't there. It actually comes a bit later. So I found it quite exciting going to try and sell my business or my concept of my business to people who might come and work with me or to potential clients. And I was never short, which is great. I was never short of people to go and talk to. But it becomes much more daunting when you start to win your first few clients and your staff starts to grow and you have people reliant on you. And then the sense of responsibility starts to grow. And one of the great things about starting a business for the M&C Saatchi group was I was very independent. They very much leave you to get on with it and really just check in on the numbers at the end of the year. Fortunately, we delivered year on year, so that was good and consistent. But the fear really comes from that next pitch that you need to win or the next salary that you need to pay. And you
and
deal with that
up.
By just
keeping on
keeping
top.
Going. You just have to keep going and accept that you're not going to win everything, and try and do your very best, hire the very best people you can with whom you can also have great fun. But there were definitely moments.
You seem to have the Midas touch when you were there, I remember, and you always seem very confident about it. So I think your sense of pragmatism shone through. But of course, we were the kind of few, two women of about five women in the senior management team. So it was a very interesting agency to be in. But you totally triumphed, if I remember rightly. You talked about having other people to look after and be responsible for. How would you describe your leadership style?
Somebody once described my leadership style as basically, it was a chap actually who worked for me at Crate Jones, and he told someone else that it was like, if you could keep up with Lisa, you were set for your career, because I moved so quickly, gave people very clear direction but not micromanaged.
Yeah.
And this chap described it as just sort of having to keep up with me, and if you could keep up and take on the responsibility, you had a lot of autonomy and could crack on. And that's probably true of my style.
Yeah.
So I tend to work best with and the people that like working with me are people who want to be quite independent. They tend to be self-starters, but in that situation I give them quite a lot of freedom and they get an opportunity to do well and to feel that they've got the freedom to define their role in whatever they happen to be doing, whether that's creative or now in my world, the legal world or the IP world or, you know, wherever they are.
You're really supportive of other women, I've noticed. And I think, you know, you have brought some amazing women through the ranks, people like Victoria Fox and Mel Cruikshank, who have worked for you but are now at top levels in their careers. You know, I'm interested to know how you support other women and why it matters.
Oh, so I don't know that it is a conscious thing. I think it's a very innate thing. I have a lot of female friends. I enjoy female company. And I, certainly in the early days at Leader, what I knew I needed was women and men who wanted to drive the business forward, who were ambitious for themselves and therefore ambitious for the business, and who could do things that I couldn't do. Actually, on reflection, quite a few of those people were women. You name some of them, Pip Hulbert, Nikki Bullard also were working with us at the time, who've gone on to great things as well. And I think one of the things that I think is true of me is that I am very competitive, mm-hmm. but I like to do well over things that I can do well. I don't feel any need to hold other people back or criticize other people in order to look good. I don't know if that's because I'm confident or whether I'm just, you know, supportive.
Yeah.
But I really believe that, and my career is definitely a reflection of bringing in great, great people whom I get on with, who I think enjoy working with me, and therefore we've been able to deliver great things.
Yes.
I also completely believe that you shouldn't hold anyone back. I do think that when people come to work for you, you have them for a short amount of time or for as much time as they're prepared to give you.
Yeah.
And you should encourage them to think about their career outside. It's their life, after all. Yeah. It's not your life to control. And so I am quite supportive of people who want to move on and who want to flourish elsewhere, because you can't hold people back and define their career. So I have been generally quite supportive, have stayed in mentoring roles with a number of the women that we've talked about. So I do think that's really important. Yeah. I think sponsoring women is hugely important. I am a mother. I got to children quite late in my career, so very much had to juggle running Leader. It was a few years into starting Leader that I had my first child. So I've had to learn how to juggle. And I think being able to be there at the time for younger women who saw that happening, has probably had a good impact on seeing me able to do both, but also being able to coach and give advice and learn together has been really important. But I think where I have played a role is that critical transition from senior into getting on to the next level while juggling your career has been a role that I've really enjoyed playing. Obviously, I really love coaching young women now as they come into their careers, helping them navigate, which is a much more complex landscape.
Yeah.
But I really do enjoy seeing and now continuing friendships with people who are doing phenomenally well.
What I've always noticed about you is that you're prepared to give women the breaks. And, you know, if confidence is ever an issue, you give people those breaks. But at the same time, you're equally supportive to men, and you're not just bringing women through at the expense of men, because we're all in this together. Would that be fair?
I mean, I have got have worked with very successfully with men as my bosses and men working for me. John O. Goodman, who's just taken on the role of CEO of Leader, has come back from the USA where he was leading the office. There is just taken over. So another one of the people from the reasonably early team is now running that agency, and a man. I think it is a mistake to think that we can do this without men.
Yeah.
Men, after all, are the ones in the senior positions now, and we need their support and their championing to ensure that women can progress in their careers and that they give them the breaks, that there is confidence. You know, the big juncture in women's careers is that pause to have children, and the maternity policy and paternity policies have got considerably more generous.
Yes.
And I think in some organisations that's a bigger barrier for women's progression, and in others where they're heavily sponsored by men who are mainly the ones in the senior roles making the decisions still, it works.
Yeah.
It's critical.
Course, you've got boys and girls.
I have.
You've got two stepkids and two children of your own.
Yes,
and your little ones are boys, although they're
that's
not
right.
little.
So I've got an older stepson. He's 27, a stepdaughter. In fact, that's not fair. He's nearly 27.
Okay.
Stepdaughter, who is 25, and two boys who are 14 and 12.
Talking of your background, going back to this concept that not everyone's life is perfect and career is perfect, and most women who've got to the top have overcome barriers, you haven't had it all easy because your mother passed away, didn't she, when you were quite young?
Yeah, so... I think as quite a lot of women will tell you, my mum has been very formative in my life for two reasons. The first, possibly more positive than the second, she taught me to be independent. So not only independent minded, but independent financially. And I think that has been one of her greatest gifts. She used to send me off to parties on a Friday night, make sure I had my own taxi fare home, not to be dependent on anyone bringing me home, male or female, and always encouraged me to have my financial independence. And I think that's been a huge lesson, and I'm very grateful for that and for her encouragement of me in my career and at university. But sadly, yes, when I was 27, she died of breast cancer and had been ill for 10 years prior to that. So her being diagnosed when I was just leaving school and going off to university was quite a big deal. I was very close to her, and it forced me to think about what I wanted in life and to be very resourceful and resilient. And whilst I would much rather she was here, I have to be thankful for that. I'm a great believer in that we learn as much by the things that go wrong, and to take it into a less emotional territory, that we learn as much, if not more, from the jobs we don't get or the pitches that we lose than we do from the glory moments. Obviously,
yes,
we can learn from both, but the sort of crossroads in our lives are often the things that are most transformative.
Yes, and now you are at a fantastic stage in your career because you're at Virgin, no doubt a close personal friend of Richard Branson's.
I'm not sure I would have myself down as a close personal friend. I'm very definitely on the staff, yes, looking after the brand. Yeah. So, and so I look after the brand licensing business for Virgin, which is really, if you like, how we think about our royalties and how we create the brand. We don't, at the moment, we don't have really any direct relationships with our customers. That's all done through our operating companies, yeah, whether that be Virgin Active or Virgin Media and Virgin Atlantic. And as I'm sure you're aware, different ownership structures in place, but the consistent theme is the brand royalties relationship. So I do that. I have absolutely no control. My role is all about influence and encouragement, although having a fantastic brand with a great heritage and legacy is very helpful, because those people who do manage our brand want to do it and want to bring it to life in the best way that they can. I also look at it from a governance point of view as well. So I look at the legal side and the contractual side, which, coming from advertising, has been an interesting journey over the last 3 years.
Well, I totally understand that, because I now work a lot with governance, so totally understand what that means. So as if you don't have enough on your plate, you yep. are going to be the incoming president of Wackel. And of course, we are looking forward to Wackel Gather, which is on the 23rd of May this year. What do you think is the value of Wackel Gather, and why should people go to it?
I think, so I'm a little bit biased here. I ran Wackel Gather for a couple of years, and it is by far and away my favourite event of the Wackel calendar. And I think the reason that it works so well is we managed to find women and men who are willing to be very open with the audience. So I never think that sitting there listening or being on the stage, that anything is forced, it all contrived. The women and men who present tend to speak from the heart, share nuggets in a way that you might in a one-to-one conversation rather than on a stage to a reasonably large audience. And I think that is of significant value because you get the unvarnished truth. I also think that we work very, very hard to ensure that there is good variety of speakers and that we try and be as current as we can and enable our audience to learn new things that they may not have learned outside. And I remember a few years ago, for example, we had Deborah Francis White come to speak to us. Many of you will be familiar with her from The Guilty Feminist. But she did a speech on, or a whole performance on being a woman and presenting and sort of taking on the room. And it was really, you know, as someone who's given a lot of presentations yeah. over many years, it was really fantastic to see someone. And I was really able to take something key out of that. And I think we try and do that every year.
It's a really inspiring day, isn't it?
Have a balance of inspiration and support, but also some challenge. And I think it's put together incredibly thoughtfully to get that balance.
And of course, right. there'll be a lot of women there who are change makers, which is indeed the theme of this year's Gather. How are you feeling about being president next year?
So I'm really excited about it. I am looking forward to... I wasn't initially when I was asked to be VP. I was excited but quite nervous. And so when people congratulated me, I was like, oh, I'm really excited, but I'm terrified. It's going to be so much work. But actually, bizarrely, the closer it gets, the more excited I feel about it. And I think that's two things. One is our new purpose. So the concept of starting to think how we bring equality, genuine yeah. equality to the industry and balance out the numbers, and how I can play a part with my exec and the rest of Wackel in inspiring and supporting that purpose is really exciting. The other opportunity for me which is a slightly selfish one, is that you get to a certain stage in your career where you sort of have your friends, and this is a real opportunity for me to meet some of the younger women coming through at WACL, and also to impose some things on the club for a period of time, like thinking about how I structure the speakers or how I think about using our opportunity to get together over breakfast.
So, of course, you'll have to use Richard Branson's address book to get some fantastic speakers for the WACL dinners. So, looking forward to that. That's your responsibility. Lucky you. So, as the mum of well, four children, effectively, a lovely wife to Giles, the incoming WACL president, and someone with a full time, very high pressure job. What do you do in your downtime apart from race to Russell and Bromley to buy new shoes?
So I don't have that much downtime. I want to say that I really like to run and do some sport. That makes it sound like I do that every day, which I don't. But I try and fit in exercise and sport. I'm trying to train for a triathlon at the beginning of June, but fitting the training in can be a little bit difficult. So I do sport. Obviously, I do, as every mum does, a whole heap of stuff around the school calendar.
Yes.
And turn up religiously, or as religious as I can, to those activities. I like to ski. I'm about to go off skiing, and I try and squeeze in the theatre and the cinema when I can, but nothing too exciting. I'm not, you know, learning to climb Everest or anything.
And any advice for young women coming through in their careers now at the early stages, just to leave us with?
So I think a couple of things. From my career, I think what I try and encourage young women to think about is going for it. You know, don't let opportunities pass you by. Try and get over that initial I can't do it and move into I can and go for it. I think that's really important. Work with your colleagues and enjoy being part of a team. Try and enjoy every minute and try and have fun. We are mainly in the marketing, advertising, communications world. It's not life or death, and so trying to enjoy it and have fun is really important. And actually, a stolen piece of advice, which I didn't do enough and regret, is I did latterly, I do network, and I think that's really important. I really enjoy the advice and company of my peer group, and I think that's invaluable. But I do think finding sponsors and mentors, it wasn't really so much of a thing when I was a grad. But I think we both heard Carolyn Everson speak last week.
At Facebook.
And she talked about building your own personal board. So actually finding at different times in your life, different people who you could look to for can look to for advice and to mentor you. And not quite as contrived as actually get them together for board meetings, but to tap into them as key individuals at key stages or key turning points in your career. I thought that was a fantastic piece of advice, and I wish I had done that. So I'm rapidly collecting board members now. But I think asking and reaching out to people and looking for support is quite a good thing to do.
Great advice. Well, on that very positive note, I want to say a very big thank you to Lisa Thomas, a big thank you to Mediacom, who have helped us put these podcasts together, and a big thank you to the team at the GDST. WACL Gather is on the 23rd of May this year, and the tickets are on sale now. Thank you.